All right. So again, apologies for the delay. So we will start in a minute or in a couple of minutes. Yud Tet Amud Bet, about halfway down the skinny lines. Hatarnagolin Muadin. It's basically the last section before we hit a new Mishnah. Okay, that's where we'll come to in just a moment. But just going back to something we left off with last week, as Phil, I'm glad to know that you've lost a week's sleep over it as well, because I was also bothered by it. So we'd had sort of two seemingly contradictory Gemaras. One was that on Yud Chet Amud Bet, I think that's where it was, we had said that we'd had a whole discussion as to whether Basar Me'ikara Azlinon or Basar Mana Tavira. So do we go after? Do we follow the first point? It might have been even earlier than that actually. Maybe it was Yud Zayin already. So whether we go, so it was Basar Tavar Mono, sorry. Yeah, it's Yud Zayin, I would bet. That's where we had that discussion. So the two cases, as far as I can see them, are as follows. The Gemara on Yud Zayin, I would bet, had been talking about a case where the animal is walking along, knocks a utensil, right? As it's walking, it knocks it over, but the utensil doesn't break there. If the animal is walking along and breaks the utensil as it's walking, that's a classic case of regel. Okay, so it walks along, pushes over, knocks over a vase accidentally as it's walking, the vase smashes there. That's a classic case of regel. Mahalech kadarko, it's walking normally and it breaks the utensil, you'd be liable full damages. What about if it rolls down, right, and smashes elsewhere? So again, you can put that in two ways. What the Gemara there was discussing was whether we consider that tsroros, right? Whether we do consider that even to be a case of tsroros, we have said in the past is liable half damages only, right? Because it's more indirect, or for whatever reason, maybe because we have a what we call a halacha l'moshe misinai, some sort of tradition, right? That's a Gemara we'd already been through. But the bottom line is, you know, nobody, well, other than Simchos, but following the majority opinion of the Rabbanon, Tzoros is liable half damages. So that was the question the Gemara had over there, was are you going to be liable full damages, or are you going to be liable half damages? But following the principle, we'll just extend that a little bit, maybe you could say that if the animal is in the public domain and it knocks over the utensil and then it rolls down into the private domain, so in the public domain, an animal, you're not liable, right? Regel birshus arabim is potter. Okay, it's one of the exemptions of regel. So maybe you'd be exempt if it takes place in the public domain. But the fact that it rolled into the private domain, right, maybe you'd be liable. And the conclusion of the Gemara, according to most of the Rishonim so far, I think, if not all of them, I don't remember exactly who disagreed, but certainly the standard reading was that we follow Me'ikara, we follow that first part, right, when the animal knocks over the utensil, and therefore it's a classic case of regel, and that's going to, where it knocks over the utensil is going to determine whether it's liable, and it also determines that it would be fully liable. It's not a case of tropes, right, it would be fully liable if it is liable.
Regardless of where the breakage...
No, if it happens, correct, exactly. It doesn't matter where the breakage takes place. It's based on where the animal is and based on the fact that the animal knocked the utensil directly. That's the point. It doesn't matter that it rolled elsewhere. It's not considered indirect. It's considered direct. That was what the Gemara said over there. Then, on Yud Tet Amud Bet, the Gemara had a discussion about... Sorry, Yud Tet Amud Aleph, right? The Gemara had a discussion about, let's say an animal was walking in the Rashut Harabim, right, in public domain, and it shoots out a stone, right? It knocks a stone as it's walking, and it smashes a utensil, but the utensil is in the private domain, right? So what's the halacha there? That is a classic case of tsoros, except that the places will determine whether it's liable or not. So if that all would have happened, if it's walking along and it knocks out a stone in the private domain and it smashes something in the private domain, that's a classic case of throws, you pay half damages. So the Gemara wants to know, what about if the animal's in the public domain? What do we follow, basically? Do we follow the beginning or do we follow the end? Do we follow where the animal is, or do we follow where the utensil actually smashed? And then the Gemara seems to conclude that we follow where the utensil actually smashed. So let's just confirm. So it had said that we had, which means it would be liable, right? Akira ein kan hanochi yesh kan, right? That was what the Gemara had discussed, and basically brought a few proofs, and the conclusion of the Gemara was that we end up saying that it is that you would be liable, right? You would be liable, seemingly that the point, the determinate point, right, is where it actually breaks, when the utensil breaks. So that's the contradiction that we've got to deal with, and Phil pointed out that, again, logically it's a difficult one. So the easiest, I don't know if it's the easiest or the hardest, the Rosh asks this question, and the Rosh says that you have a very simple principle over here. He says, "Ubier bisde acher." Right? They're not exactly the same. They're not exactly the same case. One case was talking about whether it's throwers, but our second case over here means "Ubier bisde acher." You know, did the damage get caused in? That's the language that the Torah uses. "Ubier bisde acher" means that the damage was caused in another place, and since the damage was caused in another place, we have what we call a gezerat hakatuv, right? A gezerat hakatuv, gezerat hakatuv means that there's nothing you can do in a sense, right? It's almost like the Torah has established this as the golden standard, as the principle, and therefore it almost seems like he's saying logically we should say they're the same, right? Logically we should say they are the same, but since the way the Torah phrases it is that the damage has occurred in the then that's what we're going to follow in this particular case, because there was no doubt, nothing happened in the Rishut HaRabim, right? The damage occurred in the Rishut HaYochid, and therefore you're going to be liable. So that's the way he seems to phrase it. So some people like that answer, some people don't like that answer. Meaning if you answer that way, it's very difficult to argue against it, right? If you have simply say, you know, that's the way the Torah lays it out, right? Not much you can say, but others have different approaches. So I was pointed towards a ketzos. A ketzos we have, I think we've probably done one or two before. Ketzos is a great achron, okay? Ketzos much more recent commentary. It's commentary really on Shulchan Aruch, particularly on the ketzos, short for ketzos hachoshen. There's a two volume set with lots of footnotes, so it's expanded. It used to be a very small book, but now it's got lots of footnotes, so it's expanded. Ketzos HaChoshen, written on Choshen Mishpat, so written on that part of Shulchan Aruch which deals with all the monetary laws, etc., and all these sorts of things that we're discussing, and he's always got very very deep explanations, you know, very sort of goes through all the things, really puts the pieces of the puzzle together very nicely. Rabbi Heller, Rabbi Ari Leber Cohen Heller from the, I think, 19th century or so, maybe even earlier, 19th, 18th century, yeah, I think around that. Anyway, so what he says is as follows. Let's just read it quickly. Doesn't say when he lived. Okay. Either way, so he says as follows. So he says, this is on Siman Shin Tzadi. So this is 390, Siman 390 in Shulchan Aruch, right? Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, which is not one we touch upon very often outside of learning Bava Kama. And it's all about Regel and Tzroros and all this sort of stuff. So what he says is he quotes this Rosh, right, and he points out that that's what the Rosh says, but then over here, the Golikra ve'ine malachalek ben zorak chetz lezorak kli. We've also had a different question. Remember, we had a separate question also where we talked about someone throwing a stone that was about to hit the utensil, right? And then someone comes along and smashes the utensil. Or we said if you throw the utensil and then someone smashes it, right? The difference between the two. So he basically gives a very similar answer over here. That what we have is, let's see if I can find the actual language he uses. Basically, he says that there's a fundamental difference in the laws of Nezek, of damages, between whether you are, I think the language he uses, although I can't see it this second, is what's called Poel beguf hakli, whether you are interacting directly with the utensil or not. If you are interacting with the utensil directly, then that raises it up a level, right? The fact that you have interacted directly with the utensil makes that more significant. Even though the bottom line is, in a sense, it started in point A and ended in point B, and point A was, what do you call it, negligence or whatever. So it's not really negligence because it's mahalach kadarka, but it's, you know, point A is what started off the process, and point B is where it actually breaks. If point A is where you're interacting directly with the utensil, then that's going to raise it up a level. Then that's going to make point A much more significant. Whereas if point A is just something, is whatever, you're starting off a process, let's say in our case, the animal's walking along and knocks a stone, right? So it's starting a process, but actually point B is where it gets smashed. If you weren't interacting with the utensil at point A, then point B is the key place. So that's his approach. Again, we can I don't know. Yeah, we can think about perhaps other ways to resolve this or not. But for me, that's a very it's a good one to bear in mind. Because again, we've come across this a couple of times. The difference between whether you're interacting directly with the utensil or not. Right? If you are already, I guess it's more direct. That's the point. It's more direct. You're not so convinced. Go on. Yes.
From the Rosh Hashanah Rav.
Right.
Into private property.
Right.
Breaks. I've interacted. The place where I've interacted is on the Rosh Hashanah Rav.
So again, you've moved into Odom Hamazik, right?
No, humans caught.
Who's shooting the gun? And a human's shooting the gun. So that's Odom Hamazik.
No,
that's
a highly trained baboon.
A highly trained baboon. Okay. The sharpshooter. You've trained your baboon to be a sharpshooter. So then it's really. I don't know if you've trained it to.
You should expect these things to happen.
But again, shooting a gun. To you, it's hard to imagine such a, believe it or not, hard to imagine such a scenario. But if you genuinely did that, do you know what? The Gemara always likes coming up with wacky scenarios. I'm happy to take. Let's take that wacky scenario. So again, the scenario you've described, your highly trained sharpshooter baboon, again, is really Keren. That's not Regil. That's Keren. Right, so Keren is a different thing. Keren is liable in Rashut Harabim. Regel means it's Mahalik Kadarka. It's walking along normally. It's not intended to cause damage. Right, so the fact that you've trained your baboon. I would also argue that again, if
but
you have such a thing.
Baldwin situation. He didn't realize.
That was a terrible situation. Yes, but again, that's Adam Hamazik. Because humans do have a higher level of responsibility. So you're right. There, the Alec Baldwin situation, very difficult one. His only get out, he would be 100% liable. His only get out in that particular case is that someone else is more liable than him, i.e. the person who put it there potentially is more liable than he is. That's the only real get out with Adam Hamazik, is someone else was more poshea than you were, right? That's in the same way that we said last time, right? There's no question that if I throw your vase and someone else comes along and smashes it with a cricket bat, you'd be pretty upset with both, right? The question is which one of us is more, you know, is in a sense going to actually bear the brunt of it. So coming back to our animal case, which are always more difficult in a sense because there's less intention or less obvious intention over here, and certainly in Regel there's no intention whatsoever, right? We're talking about a case where the animal's just walking along normally, right? And something happens, and again, you can't even say it's expected to an extent, right? It is expected to an extent that these things happen, but the fact that it's expected doesn't mean one's not liable. It's almost like like in a business, you know, sometimes you have expected liabilities that you're going to have to pay out. You know, occasionally things are going to go wrong. You're going to have machinery that breaks, and it's going to have to be something that you're going to have to deal with. So in a similar, I don't know if it's exactly, it's a great comparison, but in a similar way, when you have an animal, there's going to be certain damages that are going to occur as it moves around. Some of them you're going to be liable for, and some of them you're not going to be liable for. So in our particular case, what the Ketos is saying is that there is a significant difference between whether you've acted on the utensil or not, as to whether we take into account or how much we take into account that first point. Everyone agrees they're both indirect. Right, they're both indirect. No question, they're both indirect. The question is how much we take into account point A, right? How much do we take into account that first thing? And seemingly where the animal knocked the utensil directly, we would take it into account more. Okay, I don't know. That's again, if you don't like that, you can fall back on the Rosh, which says that's the way the Torah set it up. But that's a hard one. From my perspective, I always like it when it fits better from the where you can explain it a little bit more. Okay. All right. Either way, so that was leftovers a little bit from last week. Moving on now, although similar stuff. Okay, so similar stuff again. All of our Gemaras that we've been dealing with over the last couple of daf have all been dealing with this idea of tsroros, right? This idea of sort of indirect damage. And again, we're going to be we've moved on particularly to talk about differences between Rashut HaRabim and Rashut HaYachid. And now we're basically coming back to talking about a case that we have talked about in the past. We just didn't dig into it. Okay, this is quoting back from our Mishnah, I think. Pretty short, right? The HaTarnagolim Muwadin. A chicken, again, as it moves around and breaks something, is considered, you know, would be liable to pay. The owner would be liable to pay. Hoya delil, this is the key thing. Hoya delil kosher baraglov. We had said, the Mishnah had said, and we didn't really talk about it, that if there was a bucket or something strapped to its leg and it's walking around and the bucket was what caused the damage, then that's indirect, right? So the question is, why is that, right? We'd said that let's say you strap your horse to a cart, right? Or to a, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, basically to a cart. Yeah, to a harness. It's got something, it's pulling along, right? It's pulling along, it's pulling something along, and that is what causes the damage, right? So the horse is pulling the buggy, and the wheels, you know, crunch over your vase. So then you're liable full damages. That's not tsroros. That's not indirect. That's considered direct, right? It's part of what the animal's pulling. So why, in the case of the chicken, do we seem to distinguish? So I've jumped ahead a little bit as to what some of the things we're going to deal with is. But let's jump into the Gemara, dealing with that line of the Mishnah, that a tarnagol, a chicken, is muad, will pay full damages when it moves around normally, but when you have this delil, when you have something strapped onto it, then that's considered indirect. So we're about 15 lines maybe from the end, or before it gets to the wide lines. It's basically the last two dots before the Mishnah, so the one before. Hatarnagol muad in lahalech kadarkon ula shaber v'chulei, etc. Omar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says as follows: Lo shanu ela shenikshar me'elov. We're only talking about a case where it became attached automatically. Aval kosher, and that's considered to be indirect. I.e., the chicken picked it up accidentally as it was walking around. Right, as it was walking around, it, you know, got, it managed to get accidentally attached to this bucket or to this utensil, and therefore it's considered to be indirect. But let's say you tied it on. Let's say you, as the owner, kosher Adam, you as the owner tied this bucket onto your chicken's leg. Then that's in the same way that if you harness your horse to your cart, then that's considered to be direct. So too, if you tie something onto the leg of your chicken, then that's also considered to be direct. Kosher Adam chayav. Then you're liable full damages. Nikshar me'elav man chayav. Sorry, Nikshar Me'elov, Man Chayev, right? Who is it who says that you are liable who is liable? Nikshar Me'elov, let's say it becomes attached. We're talking about a case where the chicken accidentally picks up a utensil on its way. Man Chayev, who is the person who's Chayev? Everybody, you know, the Mishnah said that someone is liable half damages. The Gemara wants to know, who is it? Ilemo ba'al hadalil. Maybe we should suggest that it's the owner of the bucket, not the owner of the chicken, but the owner of the utensil. The utensil is what caused the damage. Maybe the owner of the utensil should be the one who's liable. Heichi domi. Right, what is it? How exactly is that working? That doesn't make so much sense. That just doesn't seem to fit. Ida atzne'ei onus. If he had hidden this, if he had hidden this utensil away, then of course he's liable. Sorry, excuse me. Of course he's exempt. Onus, right? He shouldn't be paying even half damages. He should be paying nothing. Onusu. Ve'ilo atzne'e posheahu. And let's say he left it out in a dangerous way. He should be liable. Should be liable for what? So maybe he should be liable for. Well, they don't really explain. We haven't talked about bur, a pit, but leaving something out and about, right? If you leave your rucksack out and someone trips on it, then it's liable. But you can also have a bur that moves. Sometimes you can leave something lying about and it actually gets moved around. So maybe that's what this is over here. Or you leave a chain in the way and it becomes attached to the chicken's leg. So again, that was negligence that caused that damage, so you should be posheahu, right? You should be liable full damages. So that doesn't make sense to distinguish and call it half damages. That's the Gemara's point. So rather, what the Mishnah must be talking about, what elachayev baal hatarnagol, we're talking about where the we must be saying in this Mishnah that the baal hatarnagol, that the owner of the chicken is the one who is liable half damages, where the chicken picked up the utensil on its own accidentally. Maishno, what's the difference? Kule nezek, why exactly are we not paying full damages, right? Delo, why don't we pay, excuse me, maishno, kule nezek delo, why aren't we paying full damages? Tichsiv, ki yiftach ish bor, right? You're only liable full damages when when you make this bur, when you make a pit, so it seems to be talking about it being a bur now, right? Being a pit type of damage. It's a different type of damage. Velo shor bur. So the Torah uses the word ish, that it has to be a person who makes this bur. But if an animal makes the bur, if your animal comes along and moves a pit, makes a pit, then that's chatzi nezek nami. You're going to be this is part of the question. The Gemara is asking, if that's what you're trying to explain to me, that the Torah had said a person who makes a bur is liable, but an animal who makes a bur is not, so then, chatzi nezek nami, you shouldn't be paying half damages either. Ish bur, velo shor bur, right? We're talking about a human being making this pit, i.e. the human being has to move the utensil into a dangerous place or into the place where it caused damage, and not the animal. If the animal moved it there, you shouldn't be paying half damages. You should be paying nothing. Ela masnisin bida'adye aduye. So the Gemara is talking about the Mishnah is talking about where the animal sort of knocked this utensil flying, right? And went through its knocking the utensil flying, then that's what caused the damage. V'chi itmar derav huna ba'alma itmar, right? That Rav Huna was talking about something else. That's not talking about our Mishnah case. That doesn't seem to match up to what the Mishnah is actually talking about. So then the Gemara finally responds, it was talking about where you're attached to a dlil hefker. You're talking about, it doesn't belong to anyone. This utensil doesn't belong to anyone. We try to pin it on the owner of the utensil. You can't pin it onto the owner of the utensil because there is no owner of the utensil. So Om Rav Huna, Nikshar Me'elav Potur. Rav Huna says, actually, more than our Mishnah. Our Mishnah had said, you're liable half damages. Rav Huna goes a step further. Om Rav Huna, Nikshar Me'elav, if it got attached on its own, then Potter, then you're exempt. Kosher Adam Chayev. If the owner attached it on, then you're going to be liable, seemingly full damages. So again, different. Rav Huna seems to be taking it a step further than our Mishnah. Mishum Mai Chayev. What are you responsible for? Why exactly are you responsible? Omer Rav Huna Bar Manoach Mishum Boro Hamizgalgel Beragli Adam Veragli Behema. You are liable for your bur, which is basically a bur hamisgalgel. It's a term which we'll come back to when we talk about more about bur. A bur hamisgalgel means a moving bur, right? The Torah talks about a pit, but as we've said with all these types of damages, it doesn't mean literally a pit on its only. That is certainly the classic case, but you can have anything. If you put down your rucksack, that's also called a bur. If you put down a chain, right? If you set up a tripwire across the road, that's also a bur, right? Lots of types of bur. So over here you have what's called a Bor HaMisgalgel, a moving pit, right? You have something else which is moving. In this case, it's some other utensil, and Bor HaMisgalgel is Baragle Odom Uvaragle Behema, whether it's attached to a human being, whether it's attached to an animal, doesn't seem to make a difference. So that's Rav Huna's approach to that case. Okay, I have to switch over Gemara's now. Let's move the new Mishnah. This has got a new volume, so I just swap as we go. Start a new one, but we're just continuing straight on. New Mishnah Yud Tet Amud Bet. Now moving a little bit more into Shein. So we've talked a lot about Regel until now. Now we're moving more into Shein. And again, a reminder is Shein literally means tooth, but dealing with damages of an animal classically eating some food. And key elements of Shein, I mean, all this is going to come out again. Key elements of Shein is that it seems to be getting some sort of benefit from this, right? It's doing it in order to get benefit. Okay. Ketzad HaShein. Muedes le'echol, right? Just as we started off our first mission of this chapter, Ketzad haregel muedes, right? Well, how exactly does regel become muad, or where is its liability? Ketzad hashein muedes. That's our first question. Le'echol saroilo answers the Gemara, answers the Mishnah, to eat what is normal to it. Habehema muedes le'echol, again similar style to what we had in our last Mishnah, which we took apart, tried to figure out what's the difference between the two lines. So I'm assuming we're going to do the same thing again over here. In fact, I think the Gemara referenced this one over here. So ketzad hashein muedes le'echol zaro ilo, habehema muedes le'echol peres v'irokos. Okay, an animal is muad to eat fruits and vegetables. Okay, ochlo ksus okelim. Let's say it ate clothes or utensils, right? Your animal comes along and eats your purse, then mishalim chatzin ezek, only pays half damages. Because why? Because it's unusual, right? So it comes along and eats your purse, then you only pay half damages for that. Bamed mar mamurim, when is that talking about? Birushus aniza. In the damaged party's property, aval birushus arabim, potter, if we're talking about in the public domain, then you are considered to be exempt, right? Considered to be exempt because, again, as we've, I think the idea is what we said in the past is, okay, again, but yeah, based on a verse, but okay, I don't want to second guess too much, actually, of the Gemara that we're going to talk about on the next Omud, but certainly the idea of Rashut Harabim is that it's a public domain, and therefore, in a sense, you know, I'm supposed to be watching my property at all times over there in my own field. I'm not necessarily watching it all the time, but I'm not watching my purse or whatever it is at every moment. But in the public domain, I'm going to be a bit more careful about that. Okay, fine. Im nehenes, if it got benefit, meshalemes masha nehenes. So if it got benefit, you pay back the benefit that he got. Ketzad mishalemes masha nehenes. How exactly does this work? How do you pay back the benefit? Ochla mitoch harechova mishalemes masha nehenes. So let's say it ate from the I think it means what's sort of laid out, basically, right? This is funny because it's really talking about in a. Seems like it. The rechova, I would think, is a rishus arabim. Okay. Either way, the point is that you eat in a sense from this place directly. Mishalemis mashenenes. Then you pay what you benefited from. But mitzidei harachova, if you're sort of going out of the way, you're doing it in an unusual way. The animal seems to be pushing a little bit further than one might have expected, then Meshalemus Mashe Zika, then you pay what you damaged. Why is that? Because we called it, it's a toldo de kerin, right? It seems more like intentional damage. It's not going for the food because the food is laid out there. It seems to be sort of trying to cause the damage intentionally almost, and therefore it's going to be a toldo de kerin. I think we'd have to try and figure out exactly what the scenario is there, because if it's I don't want to fill in too much without knowing, but my sense from what we've seen until now is that the Mishnah cannot be talking about a case where let's say if the animal could smell the food, right, and that's why it's going for the food. So maybe that wouldn't be Karen. I don't know if that would be Karen. I would think that was much closer to Shane because it knows it's there. But let's say it just happens to do it as it's in an unusual way. Mipesach achanus, right, from the entrance to the shop, mishalemus mashanenes, then you pay what you benefited. Mitoch achanus, mishalemus mashezika, but from within the shop itself, then you only pay what it has caused damage. I guess we shouldn't read too much into these into the Mishnah when we do it, because the Mishnah is intentionally written very, very shorthand way and leaves lots to try and figure out. And the Gemara is, I'm sure, later on going to try and going to sort of take it apart and figure out exactly what it's talking about. Let's just see if we have a Gemara later that deals with this. Yeah, I'm sure we do. Yeah. So once we get to once we get to Chof Aleph 21, then we're going to deal with these cases of the Mishnah. So I'm not going to read too much into this Mishnah right now. Okay, we've just laid out the principles. Now let's go from the from our Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. So start. We'll take the Mishnah piece by piece. Tonu Rabbanan. Hashen Muedes Lachol Es Aroi Lo. Rabbis taught that Shane will cause damage in a normal way, i.e., eating what is normal to it. Right, which the Mishnah, let's remember, had talked about peiros v'irokos, right, fruit and vegetables. Ketzad, how does this work? Behemah shenichnas alachatzar anizak. So now we're just spelling out a classic case in more detail. An animal goes into what eventually will be the damaged person's property. V'ochla ochlin, and eats food. Haru'uyin lo, that are normal for it. Veshosas omashkin, haru'uyin lo, and drinks that are normal for it. Meshalem yazik. Shalem, you pay full damages. Vechein, similarly, chaya, shenichnasa. Okay, so a chaya and a behema, difference between a chaya and behema, is classically referred to as, we often translate it as domesticated versus non-domesticated animals, but it really means the type of animals that you would find around, I don't know if this is a great, I'm not such an animal expert, but I would think that behemoth is sort of closer to farm type animals, whereas chaya is animals that you tend not to find in a farm. So just a couple of examples. A cow is considered to be a behemoth, right? Now, I wouldn't call it a domesticated animal in the sense that I wouldn't want one to live in my bedroom, certainly not in 2023, but again, you know, people have a lot of cows around, whereas a deer, right? A deer is considered to be a chaya, right? A deer is considered to be a chaya. When you have deer, certainly, I don't know, not eggs, but people who have deer tend to have deer that sort of roam around their bigger field a little bit different. I'm not, like I say, I can't explain it well because I'm not such an animal expert, but certainly, I guess just for simplicity, we'll just stick with the ones that we know fall into certain categories as opposed to others. And obviously, more wild animals, right? I don't know, a lion or something like that, certainly would be considered a chaya and not a behemoth. Okay? There's many, many other differences. I can't remember if we've mentioned this in the past. It's not really relevant to Bava Kamma per se, but just worth mentioning once we're talking about that you can have kosher behema and a non-kosher behema, and you can have a kosher chaya and a non-kosher chaya, right? So that doesn't distinguish. So a non-kosher behema pig, for example, is considered to be a behema, right? It's a domesticated animal in the sense that, you know, people have it around, you know, it's a very farm-type animal, but it's certainly, everybody agrees it's not kosher, whereas a deer, again, to come back to that same example, is considered to be a chaya, I wouldn't call it a wild animal, but it's considered to be non-domesticated, but is obviously kosher. Or a giraffe. Good kosher giraffe. Okay, it would be a chaya. Okay. Either way, so Chaya, so we said Chaya, similar thing. Let's say your deer walked in, shenichnaso lachatzar, and it goes into somebody else's property. V'torfa behemov. Okay, maybe deer is not a good example for this. But let's say your I'm trying to think what's okay,
a
I
dog,
guess. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, potentially. I guess the dogs is hard one because you have probably different breeds that are a little bit more I don't know, farm type or more domesticated.
A dog is a dog, no?
I don't think necessarily. No, I don't see why you wouldn't distinguish. I'm not sure. Certainly, maybe in terms of chaya behemoth you would. Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know is the answer whether you would. So let's just stick with an easy one. Let's say you're having I think everybody would agree, a leopard, right? We consider it a chaya. So let's just call it for that, for argument's sake. That's our case. So you're walking along with your leopard, or you've let your leopard wander around. Nichnas al chatzar, and it goes into the that might be it's not a great example, but let's just stick with it for now. Your animal goes into the damaged person's property, the torah of behema, and eats up their cat, the ochla basar, and eats the meat, right? Mishalim nezek shalom, you pay full damages, right? So right, because it's normal for that animal to go and eat up the other parah she'ochla sa'arin. Let's say a cow ate barley. V'chamor she'ochol karshinim, or I should point out that apparently sa'arin, barley, is considered to be more normal for a donkey to eat. Right? It's unusual for a cow to eat, so that's maybe donkey food. Whereas the chamor ochol karshinim is some sort of... I have in my mind that often they're translated as vetches, but I don't know if that helps me to know really what it is. It's some sort of grain, a different type of grain, and again, basically the idea is that that's more normal for a, as Rashi says, sa'urin shehein ma'achal chamor, right? That's a donkey food, whereas the donkey has eaten cow food. Basically, okay. So the cow eats donkey food. The donkey eats cow food. So what's the halacha? The kelev shelikek es Hashem v'chazer she'ochal chaticha shel basar. Right. So again, they seem to be eating each other's food. Mishalim nezek shalim. They still pay full damages. Why? We just said if you eat what's unusual to it, then that's not. Then you only pay half damages, right? We said our Mishnah said if it eats food, if it eats clothing, right, then that's unusual. Then you only pay half damages. So why is that? So what's the difference over here? The difference is that it's food. Okay, food is food. Food is normal to eat, right? It might not be your exact. The Gemara is just spelling out for us that it might not be the exact type of food, right? You might not. It might not be. The dog ate the whiskers, right? The whiskers, cat food, right? Usually it didn't spot that it had a big picture of a cat on the front of the packaging, right? And it ate the cat food. So, okay, but there's still food, right? It's not crazy for that to happen, and therefore it's normal enough. And that would be, you'd be liable for damages. Omar of Papa. Hashta de Amrat Kol Midi de Lav Urche, right, he's gonna ask this question. Kol Midi de Lav Urche, now that we have said anything that's not normal, V'ochla le alidea dechak, or it eats it but it's been sort of forced to eat it, Shemei Achila, right? It's considered to be eating, right? That works. Then Hai Shunra De'ochal tamre, if you have a cat which eats dates, v'chamra, chamor, a donkey, de'ochal binisa, that eats fish, then mashalim nezik shalim, then you pay full damages. Hahu chamra de'ochal nahamo, but we have the following case. Let's say you have a chamor, a donkey, which eats a nahamo, a piece of bread, a loaf of bread, okay? Upalse lasala. So while it's eating, well, I've added in words. Upalse la sala, and also ate the basket. Okay, so it ate the bread and it ate the basket, or at least damaged, chewed on the basket enough that it caused damage to the basket. Chayve Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says you are liable as follows: l'shalim nezek sholim anahama, to pay full damages for the bread. But on the basket, you only pay half damages, right? Because it's, again, one is considered to be food, normal thing to eat, and one is not considered to be food. The Gemara wants to know why. That doesn't make sense. Kiven de urche lemechal nahama. Once it's normal for once the animal, once this donkey is eating the bread normally, then surely it's also normal for it to chew a little bit on the basket as well, right? An animal doesn't, the donkey doesn't sit down with a knife and fork and only, you know, make sure to slice the bread and not touch the basket at all. It's putting it, you know, puts a whole, its whole face in, right, and chews on it. So again, it might get a little bit of the bread, might get a little bit of the basket. It's not sort of particularly careful as to what it's eating and what it's not eating. So that's what the Gemara wants to know. Once it's normal to be eating the bread, normal enough at least, then it's normal enough to be eating the basket as well to cause damage to that. So the Gemara responds and says, no, the ochal v'hodar pales. So basically ate the bread and then it went away and came back and ate the basket later, chewed on the basket later and caused damage to it. Okay, so that's the scenario. But again, we see from this Gemara seemingly that if the animal, while it's eating something that's normal, if, you know, it was normal, or at least normal-ish, for it to then be eating something else or chewing on something else while it's doing that, then that's still going to be considered full damages. I mean, other examples might be, let's say it eats your strawberries off your bush or something, you know, and in addition to your strawberries being eaten off the bush, it ends up pulling out the bush itself, right? Or it pulls off the twigs, or it pulls off the leaves or something, which you are planning your, I don't know, eats your grapes, and then also pulls off the vine leaves, you know, which you are planning to use for your supper as well, right? You're going to use the vine leaves as well. So the point is that's also considered to be normal, right? It wasn't eating them. I'm making an extension from this Gemara, but I would say, based on this Gemara, that's what the Gemara is telling us, that it's all part of that process, and therefore you're going to be liable for the whole thing. But the Gemara wants to know, pas urchehu, is it normal for a donkey to eat bread in the first place? Right, that we've taken for granted, but is that really true? Uraminhu, we have a contradiction. Ochla pas ubosar v'tavshil mishalem chatzi nezek. If an animal ate, excuse me, bread or meat or some sort of cooked food, right? I don't know, a nice pie or your pasta bake or whatever it was, then chatzi nezek, only pay half damages. My love, bibahema. Aren't we talking about with a behemoth, you know, an animal like a donkey or a cow, something like that? Isn't that what we're talking about? So no, the Gemara says lo b'chaya, talking about a chaya, and that's why it's unusual, right? Your lion, lions don't eat bread, or your deer, right? That's weird for them to eat. So chaya bosar urchehu, right? What do you mean? We've included in this list is meat. Are you telling me it's unusual for a chaya to eat meat? Right? It's unusual for your lion to eat meat. Unusual for your leopard to eat meat. What do you mean? Of course, it's normal for them to eat meat. So the Gemara says no. The mitvi. We're talking about where it's roasted meat, right? If it's roasted meat, then it's unusual. Ve'iboy seima, or maybe it would have a different. Different explanation. Batavia. We're talking about a. Batavia, we're talking about a deer, right? A tzvi. Talking about a deer, and therefore it's unusual for a deer to eat meat. Ve'iboy seima la'olam bibahema. Maybe say that we actually are talking about a behemoth. Are you talking about your cow or your donkey? Ubi pertura, and you're talking about where it ate the bread on the table, right? So it's not that it's unusual to eat bread, but the fact that it almost sort of climbed onto the table and ate it. You know, it was in an unexpected place. It seems to have gone further than usual to eat it, and therefore that's the part that it's unusual. I don't know if maybe in our scenario, it might be, you know, sort of, I don't know, reached into a cupboard or something and pulled it out. That was the unexpected part. That was the part that seems to be unusual. I wonder if this is a good place to stop. I just want to point out, though, that we have over here. So Rashi says, "Bipatura" means sha'al hashulchan. It's talking about, it's on a table. Ochlu sha'ein darka bakach. It's not normal to do that. But, I have a few, yeah, okay, so here, So the Rabbeinu Chananel has what we call a different girsa. Different girsa basically means a different different text, right? Effectively, or a sort of slight variation on the text. Sometimes you have a different girsa because you literally have a different tradition, right? You just whatever the printers ended up doing it a little bit different. Sometimes you have a different girsa where the text you have in front of you is just not possible. So that's the sense you get from Rabbeinu Chanan, or others point out that maybe that's where Rabbeinu Chanan is coming from. Rabbeinu Chanan says that it's not patura, a table, it's patuta, which he explains basically is pas besoch marak, that it's inside some sort of soup, right? That it's bread, it's like become broken down in types of soup, and that's why it's considered to be unusual. Bread would be considered normal, but this is a different type of bread, and that's why it's unusual. But what I can't remember where I saw this. It says over here, who explains? I think it's the Rashba who explains. Yeah, basically what he says is that this machlokas between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel, or this sort of different text, may indicate a debate as to whether where something is found, whether where the food is, whether that place, the makom, is considered to be enough of a difference. Right? Can you have does where it is make a difference to whether it's normal for the animal to eat? You might have, you know, Rabbeinu Chananel basically, who's disagreeing with this, seems to be saying, or you could basically point out that he cannot fathom that if this type of food is a normal type of food, that putting it somewhere else makes it abnormal to eat. Right? If you have a piece of bread which is normal for an animal to eat, but the fact that you put it here as opposed to there makes it abnormal to eat, so that's just, to him, that doesn't make any sense, and therefore he changes it. Whereas according to Rashi, that does seem to be what the Gemara is saying. Right? The Gemara is saying that if it's in place A, then it's normal, but if it's in place B, then it's abnormal. Right? That does seem to make a difference. So I think that's something we're going to come back to next time as well, actually, where an animal goes... actually, maybe we should just... Maybe let's go a little bit further. Yeah, let's just do the next couple of lines on Chof Amud Aleph. We'll get to that full stop, and then we'll stop there for the next time. So we'll just add one more. These are all really stories. Whenever the Gemara starts with Hahu, Hahu is a story. It means that, once upon a time, there was that, maybe it's a good way, we should start telling them like that. Makes it more exciting. Once upon a time, there was a donkey, and Hahu Bircha, not a donkey, a Bircha is a goat, Barcha. The Chaza Lifta Apuma de Dona, it basically saw a type of vegetable. A lifter is like a okay, I don't remember. It might actually be
a turnip.
Okay, there you go. Blackadder fans can never forget a lifter. All right. So yes. So this goat sees a turnip, and it's sitting in the top of a utensil, right, of some sort of vase or something. Sarich solik, so it grabbed a hold of the utensil, it sort of tipped it up. V'ochra lelifta, and ate the turnip. V'tavri ledona, and it smashed the utensil as it was doing it. So chayvei rova, rova said you're liable al lifta ve'adona nezek shalom. So you pay for both, right? You pay for the turnip that it ate, and it pays for the utensil that it smashed. My timer, what's the reason? Given the urche lemecha lifta, since it was normal for the animal to eat the turnip, to eat the vegetable, urche nami lesaruche lemislak. Again, proving sounds to me very similar to what we said before, that what the Gemara is basically pointing out is that anything that is normal in the way of eating, right, in the same way that the donkey that ate the bread and also nibbled on the basket while it was eating the bread, that was also considered to be normal because it was in the process of eating. So too, again, you have this goat which is, you know, moving around the turnip in order to, moving around the vase in order to eat the turnip. So you're going to be liable for both, and we'll leave it for there till next time. Okay?
Yeah. Well, I woke up then.
There we go.